Let me remind you where we were. Okay, sorry. First of all, sorry, before us really starting, this is free advertisement. Second, homework 7 will be on the web by noon. So I've written it, but I want to go over it once again. But it will be on the web at noon. And one thing that it will have the second example, a second example for something that we will do the first example of today, meaning a genuine evaluation of the weight system, the algebraic weight system. Homework 6 is due, and homework 5 is returned with a solution set. So I have to tell you that probably it was the hardest assignment I've given so far because nobody got it right. So, and furthermore, it was the hardest to read for me because, well, almost everybody got it nearly right, but with some crucial mistake somewhere, and each one made the crucial mistake somewhere else, in a different place. So, it was hard, hard reading and hard, anyway, so that's why there is a solution set. So let me remind you where we were. I asserted, proved to some degree that, but in fact to as much as I ever planned to, that given a Lie algebra, a metric, and a representation, you can construct a weight system. And here is a summary of the construction. You take your core diagram, you mark every half internal edge with a Latin letter, and have every skeleton or edge with a Greek letter, and then you construct an expression which is built out of the structure constants of the Lie algebra, the matrix elements of the inverse metric, and the representation, the matrix element of the elements of the representations, by mapping internal vertices to structure constants, internal edges to inverse metric, and skeleton vertices to representation elements, to elements of representation matrices. And then the claim was that this was well defined and satisfies IHX and STU and all that nonsense, and I'm not going to go through it again, but I do want to compute it, just to convince you, for some Lie algebra, just to convince you that this is actually, it's actually more fun than it seems, okay? So, by the way, how hard is it to compute, okay? So, let's pretend, so we're doing the GLN case. So, just for fun, for the GLN case, so the Lie algebra is GLN, and let me take the simplest representation you can imagine, the defining representation. So, I don't know, I'll write it that well, the field raised to the power n, okay? First of all, what is the dimension of the Lie algebra? The dimension of the Lie algebra is, what is it? N squared, I believe. I believe N squared. And what is the dimension? Sorry, this is capital N, if this is capital N. And what is the dimension of the representation? It's only N. So a priori, how much effort will be involved in computing something like this? Well, we have to sum over 6 indices that run from 1 to n squared. So that's n to the 12 summations. Plus 3 that run from 1 to n, so that's n to the 15. So we have to sum over n to the 15 terms, things that look like hell. Okay? Now, n to the 15, take n equal 5, and n to the 15 is sort of infinity. So, well, not quite infinity, but I mean, it's really hell. You will see that it isn't. Okay? So, okay, let's just, so let's just do the calculation and see what happens. So, first of all, English letters, sorry, Latin letters from the beginning of the alphabet stand for indices, sorry, for elements in the Lie algebra of GLN. But GLN has dimension n squared, so it makes more sense to use a pair of indices that run from 1 to n. So every individual index A stands for either A or B prime or whatever, something in the beginning of the English alphabet, will be replaced by a pair of indices IJ, where IJ run from 1 to n, instead of running from 1 to n squared. And how? In other words, instead of choosing a basis x sub a running from 1 to n squared, I will choose a basis indexed by two indices. And it's completely obvious which basis I would want to choose, right? My Lie algebra is the Lie algebra of n by n matrices. I want the basis. It's clearly the simplest basis you can choose is you look at the matrices that are zero everywhere, except that they have one in row I and column J. Okay? The only thing I need to know about this choice of basis is what is the product of two such matrices, because everything else is defined from the product. So, what is xij times xkl? Well, I believe the only way you can have a non-zero answer is if column j is equal to row k. Sorry, if the one of the first matrix when you multiply, so if the one of this matrix is in the same column, in the same column number as the row number of the one here. In other words, this is delta jk times, and then what you have left is a one in row I, so and column L, so xil. Am I right? Okay, I think I'm right. Okay, good. But this means, okay, but now I want to compute the structure constants. So I have to figure out what the bracket is, and I have to figure out what the inner product is. So, okay, the bracket is easy. So xij xkl is just, well, you first multiply xij by xkl, you get this. So it's delta jk xil minus, well, do it in the opposite order, so you get delta l I x delta l xjk. Am I right?
Kj.
Kj, yes, my notes also say kj. Good. Thanks. Next, we have to find what the metric is. So remember, the metric was, well, Ti, well, we had to do Tab, T sub AB. T sub AB becomes Tij, Tkl. And it's by definition, well, I didn't tell you which metric to choose, but when I introduced GLN, I gave it with a metric. So, and the metric was the trace of the product. So it's the trace of xij, KL, but this is delta IJ, the trace of XIL, but, right, because I just copied, but the trace of XIL, the trace of a matrix like this is 1 if and only if the two indices are equal. So this is delta IJ, delta IL. By the way, you should read the letter delta as great simplification. Right? Every time you see a delta, it means that most of the times it's zero. So most of the summation, we will be summing over zeros. So every time you see a delta in an answer, it means that things are easy. Okay? Anyway, now let's figure out what is the inverse. So delta IJ, delta KL. So I have to invert the net. Yes?
Should be this delta JK in the first delta.
Here?
Yes.
Yes. Thank you. The two nearby indices and, yeah. So now I need to invert this n² by n² matrix. Fortunately, it's a permutation matrix. Right? It has only zeros and ones, and in every row and column it has only one. So its inverse is essentially the inverse permutation, and you can find that the permutation represented by this is actually a transposition. A product of transpositions. So its inverse is itself. So this is simply the same. Delta JK, delta IL. And if you don't believe me, the best way is to check. So let's check it. So let's compute TIJ KL with TMN. Right, I'm trying to multiply. Multiply meaning taking the same index here. So with TKL MN. Okay? So this is, delta JK, delta IL, this is these two. Wait, am I doing right? Yeah, that's how you do multiplication, yes. K... You know, here I should have, by justice, I should have used put the indices upstairs. So this will be delta JK, delta IL. Okay, so delta KN, delta LM, LM, right? But there is summation here over the repeated index. So really, you should be thinking this is AB and this is BC, and there is summation over B, which means summation over K and L. So, but the only K that will contribute is if K is equal to J, and then it will only work if you only get the contribution if K is also equal to N. So really this becomes delta J N delta, likewise for L, the only contribution is if L is equal to both I and M, which forces I and M to be equal. So delta I M, so I is equal to M, K, sorry, J is equal to N, and this is exactly delta AC. Hence we've proven that it's the inverse matrix. Okay? So, and finally, what is the structure constants? So, Fij, KL, MN is, by definition, you take the bracket of the first two, so XIJ xkl, and inner product it with the last one. Okay? And a different way to say it, by the way, is to say that this is the trace of, well, when you do the inner product, when you do the bracket, let's take first the first order multiplication, so xij, xkl, xmn, minus the trace of, let's do the opposite order multiplication, so x, kl, x, ij, xmn, okay? But, so let's do it a long equal, but now, here, you only get a contribution if j is equal to k, otherwise the product is not equal to, is zero, and then l must be equal to m, and finally to get the trace right, to get the trace non-zero, you'll get n is equal to I. So the result is delta jk delta l m delta n I minus whatever you get here, which is delta maybe the best way is to think of it as if it's reversed. So n I no n n k delta, let's see, nk, well, you know what, I'm trying to be too smart, let me just read it, nk lijm, lijm, okay? Now let's interpret it. So, internal edges used to be labeled by A and B. Instead, now they are labeled by pairs where A is replaced by I in my notes, so not to be confused, I did it A here and B here. So I mean it's replaced by pairs IJ and KL. But let me sort of adopt a nicer convention. And the convention will be that I will always write the first index to the right of the line as I look from the center, and the second index to the left of the line. So I write it this way. So here is where the line wants to be, and I write the first index to the right as I look from the center. So I'm standing in the center looking towards the top, and then the first index is on the right, the second is on the left. And likewise for K and L. So I'm looking from here down to here, K will appear here and L is appearing here. And the result is that I've written the four indices IJ, KL counterclockwise around the edge, okay? But then the edge itself becomes a T upper A upper B, which amounts to delta JK delta IL. So really, this is equal to this, and this is equal to this, and the lines now, so the edge got replaced by a pair of edges, but the pair of edges mean something else. These are not edges, they're deltas. They mean J is equal to K, I is equal to L. Likewise, if you have a if you have a vertex, I will mark it sort of counterclockwise, I, J, K, L, M, N, and the thing written here becomes, okay, one possibility is that j is equal to k. J is equal to k, so I get this. So if the inputs are j and k, j, I have a delta from j to k. And then the next input is L and, sorry, and then the next delta is L is equal to M and N is equal to I. But this is just one possibility. The other possibility is everything reversed. And the best way to remember how to draw it is to say you draw the same thing in the middle, but then you twist each side. Okay? So I, J, K, L, M, N, and let's see, what are the things that are connected? J to M, J to M, K to N, K to N, and I hope that the last one is right too. And shame on me, because I forgot to compute the representation tensor, right? Without the representation tensor, I cannot do anything. So let's compute it. Well, I suppose I have to choose a basis for the representation as well, but this is going to be easy. So I will choose EI to be, right, this is the basis for the representation space, and I'll choose it to be the standard basis vector of f to the n. So it's 0 up to, well, the standard basis vector. And then, let's see, if I take xij and multiply it by ek, what do I get? The indices for the representation thing had to be above or below? Below, right. So, above, what did I use? It doesn't really matter. I mean, at the end, these are all delta functions. So this is delta jk, right? J has to be equal to k, and then you get ei. And then using my conventions, so if I have a k l here, then really a stands for a pair ij, and each of these lines becomes a single line, and I have that j is equal to k, so j is connected to k, and I is connected to L. Okay? And now I can evaluate my diagram. So to evaluate my diagram, well, I'll just do it using these conventions. So first of all, I will get a sum of two things, because the structure constants involves a sum of two things, actually a difference. So I'll get a difference of two things. Let's evaluate each one separately. So right now, I'm pretending that the structure constants are just the first term. So I get, I have to label everything as before, so as in here. So I'll have I prime, J prime, K prime, L prime, M prime, N prime. And up on here, one of the two. It actually doesn't matter, these are dummy variables. So I use I and J, and K, L, M, N, And here I have to use, well, I guess I'll keep the Greek letters, but they run from, so alpha, beta, gamma. And this really becomes J is equal to J prime, K is equal to K prime, L is equal to L prime, and so on. And M is equal to M prime by the first thing. J prime is equal to K prime. So basically, using the first term in the bracket, I will get that all indices along this slice are equal. J is equal to J prime because of the structure constants. Sorry, because of the metric. J prime is equal to K prime because we're in the first term of the structure constants. K prime is equal to K, again, because of the metric. And K is equal to gamma because of the matrix, the representation. So all indices along this slice are equal. Likewise, all indices along this slice are equal. And finally, all indices along that slice are equal. But, sorry, you know what, let's do the other one as well. The other one will be the same. My artistic talents have always been very limited. What am I doing?
It's supposed to be a twist.
Right, sorry. The other one is the same except with an extra twist. So all indices along a curve are equal. Okay? But you see, the indices were still summation variables running from 1 to n. So all, what is it, 5 indices that appear over here are equal, but are summed from 1 to n. All 5 indices that appear here are equal, but are summed from 1 to n. All 5 equal, right? And basically, furthermore, these are all the equalities that I got. So this summation over all of these indices, I don't know, I may as well call them alpha, beta, gamma. So for each choice of alpha, beta, and gamma, I just get a 1. Because all equalities are satisfied, and I get just a product of delta functions at equal entries, which means 1s. So this is a summation of 1s over 3 variables, so which runs from 1 to n. So overall, this sums to n cubed. And this sums, well, okay, likewise, but now I have that all indices are equal, because when you trace this diagram, you get just one curve. So overall, this is just n. So therefore, the result is n cubed minus n. This is definitely easier than n to the 15 summations. Okay? Okay. Let's do another quick example and then switch to a completely different topic. So, the other quick example, I just want to convince you that... or not convince you, I want to emphasize that this is general. I've chosen a simple example, but I could have evaluated any core diagram whatsoever. So let's evaluate this one. This one has no internal, no structure constants. So no minuses ever, right? So I just have to take each chord and thicken it to a pair. So I'll get this. Okay? And since there are 3 components here, this will go to n cubed. How about this one? So here, okay, each chord gets thickened to a bridge. So one is, so this is the slash, now the backslash. Right? Each chord gets thickened to a bridge. And now I connect the sidewalks on the sides of the bridge. This is a single component, so I get n. right? And, you know, clearly I could evaluate this, and what would I get? N to the fourth. Clearly I could evaluate this, what would I get? So let's do it even quicker. Instead of doing all the thickening, I'll pretend that I'm walking on this kind of bridges. So I just walk on the sidewalks. One component, and now I'm a green person, before I was a red person. Second component, now I've covered everything, two components, so it goes to n squared. And finally, you know, suppose I wanted to compute this. Ah, this is too hard for me to do, because it will involve four terms. Each internal vertex will be replaced either by the sort of untwisted way of merging three bridges, or the twisted way with a minus sign. So this will involve four terms. Four is more than I can do, but it's still going to be an easy polynomial in N. So easy polynomial in N. Now, this is a major simplification relative to the sort of original way of thinking. But by the way, we are still in an exponential time. Okay, sorry. For chord diagrams, if you just have chords with no internal vertices, the computation takes linear time. Probably. Yeah, I don't know. Sort of, if you're very picky, maybe you need some logarithmic factor as well for bookkeeping. But anyway, essentially no time at all. So if you wanted to compute the weight of a diagram of degree 200, you could do it. If you have internal vertices, the complexity is 2 to the power of number of internal vertices. Okay? And then a linear. Times a linear factor. Okay? Are you okay? Okay, now if I wanted to do it for SON, you know what? Maybe I'll tell you what will happen if you try to do it for SON. So, I'll only tell you the result without going through the details. So basically, the generators for SON will be anti-symmetric matrices. So you will not, so X sub A will not be a XIJ, but rather XIJ minus XJI. Okay? This is more complicated, but you can still feed it through everything, and you'll just get bigger expressions. Okay? And I'll just tell you what the result will be. The result will be that everything is the same, and the only thing that gets changed is that instead of having this sort of difference on the vertices, it will be on the edges. Okay? So, you could still map this to this, and you could still map the skeleton vertices to the same thing. However, every internal edge will become either just the bridge or the twisted bridge with a minus sign. Okay? And all of this is by explicit computation. So therefore, now I can, and then all the rules are the same. Oh, everything else is the same. So now if I wanted to compute, for example, this diagram, it will become the difference of two things. This minus the thing with a twist, so But this thing has, okay, this one has two components, this has one, so this will be n squared minus n. Okay? And if you want, basically you can do everything. Okay? You know, but now the complexity is exponential even for core diagrams. So this will involve a sum of four terms, and I cannot do it, so I will not do it. Okay? I should say a few, you know, I'll say a few more comments. What did I want to say? Okay. There are similar algorithms for the symplectic group. The exceptional Lie algebras are harder. No such lovely algorithms that I know. If you want to look at other representations, then basically, so instead of just the defining representation, if you want to look at other representations, then basically the only thing that will change is the sort of external part, the part where you connect with the skeleton, and you'll have to believe me that it will change in a way that one can work out. So everything can be done, and at the end, you can get a computation that somehow depends only on, I'm being rough, I mean I'll have to be more detailed later, but basically suppose you thicken this diagram, you get a little surface which is made out of five bands that are connected together either in an obvious way or in a twisted way. So you get a linear combination of surfaces. And for and in fact, for SON, you will get also a linear combination of surfaces, but the twists come in a different place. So at the end, you can reduce everything to, if you knew what these combinations of surfaces were, you could compute everything for all representations. Okay? Furthermore, up to degree 12, I think, everything comes from this construction. So everything comes from GLN and SON. So everything can be computed along these lines. But at some point beyond that, the exceptional Lie algebras actually do start appearing, and eventually even non-algebraic things do start appearing. Okay? And then the last comment is, you know, I should have done it earlier, but let's do a sanity check. Will this satisfy the four-term relation? Right? I mean, if not, we made a mistake somewhere in the last three, four classes. So, 40. So I have to check if, so let's check it only for GLN. I mean, you can check it for SLN, sorry, for SON just as well. But, so I have to check that this minus that evaluates the same as this minus that. But the evaluation algorithm says, let's replace this by a bridge, right? And afterwards, replace, or beforewards, it doesn't matter. So let's replace one chord by a bridge, and then replace the other chord also by a bridge. Okay? And then the only thing that will matter is the number of boundary, of the number of cycles that you get. Okay? But you see, I can take this bridge and slide it along the sidewalk of this bridge until it's connected here. Right, I could take this pair of points and slide them along here until they are on that side. And that will give me the same answer as this. Okay? So these two will always give the same power of n. Likewise, I can slide this bridge along the far sidewalk until it comes out here. And it will be the same answer as this. So these two will also always give the same power of n. So in fact, 4t is satisfied in a somewhat degenerate way because it's not all four terms are involved. This one is equal to this one, that one is equal to that one. You're welcome to verify Sorry, 4t for son, and then you will find that there is actually a mixing of the terms. So right over here you will get a sum of two things because the bridge might be either straight or twisted. And then one, if you take the straight option and you slide it and slide it, you'll get to the straight option of this. If this bridge is twisted, when you try to slide this to the other side, you'll get, it will come to here, and you'll get the twisted version of this. So, but you'll have to, so there will be some mixing between the terms, but everything will still work. So in fact, check 4t for W S O N S O N in the algorithm sense, in the way of computation sense, not in the Lie algebraic. In principle, we've already proven it, right? So this is sort of the sanity check, not the okay. Are we okay? Okay, so completely different topic. So I'll start very, very loosely, okay? But then I'll make it more precise. So, well, okay, what I want to show is that we already know that it's an algebra. I want to tell you that it's a bi-algebra. Okay, now what's a bi-algebra, first of all? So, let me start from where it comes from. A is somehow dual to not invariance. Okay? The elements of A can be multiplied because knots can be multiplied. But knot invariants can also be multiplied. In fact, I think it was a homework assignment before to show that the product of two finite type invariants is again a finite type invariant. So there should be somehow a product on A dual, because A dual is not invariant. Is the set of not invariants. So there should be some product on a dual. So what does bi-algebra mean? A bi-algebra means a vector space A with two products, with a product to make it an algebra, and also a product on a dual. So I should say that this is still loose definition. The precise definition will come in a minute. Okay? And furthermore, these two products should be compatible in a certain way. So compatible in the appropriate way. Okay? So, I have reasons to expect that A will be a bi-algebra. Because, again, knots can be multiplied, therefore elements of A can be multiplied, but also knot invariants can be multiplied. So elements of a dual, there should be multipliable as well. Furthermore, I have to tell you that this is extremely good news, because it turns out that being a bialgebra is an extremely restrictive condition. Basically, if you are a bialgebra and you are graded, and A is graded, and some small amount of further conditions which are all satisfied, then it forces the structure of A to be something simple-minded. So, in fact, this will improve that A is a polynomial algebra, a polynomial algebra on some finitely many generators, sorry, on some set of generators, not finite. Finite in every degree, but not finite overall. So A will be the set of all polynomials, or is isomorphic to the set of all polynomials over our ground field, over some specific elements within A. So, the first one is this one. Okay? The next one is probably this one. No, probably better to write it as this one. And then so on. So, every element in A can be written uniquely as a commutative product of these things. These specific things. That's a great deal of structure. That's what we want to do next. And by the way, the homework assignment that was very hard was a small chunk of this proof, of this theorem. Just a small chunk. The theorem itself is much bigger. Namely, essentially you had to show that every element of A can be written uniquely as the product of some power of this diagram with something else. The something else, you didn't have to say anything about its structure. Okay? Okay. So that's the goal. And I practically have no time to say anything about... Do I have anything? Well, I don't have time to say anything real, so maybe I'll only say that if you recall way back, I listed the dimensions of A in every degree. And then I said, and so I also had a row in the listing for the so-called number of primitives in each degree. So the generators of this polynomial algebra are called the primitives. And the number of primitives in the given degrees, in degree 1 it's 1, in degree 2 it's 1, in degree 3 I think it's also 1, in degree 4 it's probably 2, then 3, then 5, then maybe 8, looks like Fibonacci for a while, and then it's I think 12. To spoil, okay? So it's much less, it's much more manageable than A itself, yet it is still not understood. So we've just pushed the part where we don't understand to, you know, a smaller part of A, the primitives of A, but we still don't understand it. And let's stop here.